Hey, welcome back to Beyond the Bases. Good to be back with you. I am Kyle Seeloff, and we've got episode one of the offseason for you today, and a very exciting episode at that, as one of the newest Marlins, but a very familiar name to South Florida baseball fans, joins us today. That would be outfield prospect Griffin Conine, who the Marlins acquired as the player to be named later in that August deal that sent Jonathan Villar to Toronto. Had a lot of fun talking with Griffin. Talked about a little bit of everything, really. His path to professional baseball, his dad, of course, the impact that he's had on him, and this wild and crazy 2020 season. So stay tuned. That's coming up in just a moment. In addition, I'm also chatting with Julian Reams. Julian is a local South Florida artist and a firefighter who has partnered with the Marlins in the Promote the Vote auction that's focusing on voting, social justice, and racial equality. And Julian has customized some incredible, and I mean they are incredible, Air Force Ones and Jordans that you can bid on now. Much more on that coming up in just a little bit, but if you want to check it out and you want to place a bid, go to marlins.com/promote the vote. Again, marlins.com/promote the vote. My conversation with Julian coming up in just a little bit. Well, relatively quiet thus far for the Marlins. A couple of days ago, Brad Boxberger elected free agency. So too did Francisco Cervelli, who we know is retiring. Some more notable names that might stick out to you that have elected free agency: Matt Joyce, Nick Vincent, Brian Moran, Drew Steckenrider. Best of luck to Drew. He has had a heck of a 2 years trying to get healthy. He showed a lot of promise a couple of years ago. Drew Steckenrider has elected free agency. By the way, that doesn't prohibit these guys from coming back by any means, but just letting you know some of the guys that have elected free agency. But yeah, some names there: Steckenrider, Joyce, Boxberger, who had a very nice year. Of course, Francisco Cervelli, who suffered another concussion, and he has opted to hang him up. So best of luck to all those guys. Hopefully we'll see some of them back in 2021. We've got you covered all off season long with content. We'll fire up the podcast every 2 weeks, so make sure you stay tuned. Like it, subscribe, and when we drop a new podcast every 2 weeks, it'll be right there for you. Okay, no time to waste. Let's get right into our first conversation of the podcast. Episode one of Beyond the Bases this off season. Here is one of the newest Marlins, outfielder Griffin Conine.
Well, Griffin, it's a pleasure to chat with you. I know this has been an unbelievable year full of twists and turns for so many people. So did you ever give any consideration to being traded in a season in which you didn't even get a chance to play any games?
Not at all, you know, not at all. Until I definitely did reach a point where I saw the Jays were making a lot of moves and kind of really, you know, going all out for the postseason when they saw they had a chance. So I won't lie that I knew that it was possible towards the end of the year when they really, you know, when trade deadline was approaching, still the furthest thing from my mind that it would be me. But I did see they were really active and making a lot of moves. So it was in the back of my mind for sure. Definitely not prevalent at all that it would actually happen and go down the way it did. But yeah, it was a shock for sure.
You know, there are so many feel-good stories in baseball, guys that were never given a chance, drafted late, guys that play for a hometown team. Your initial reaction when you learned you had been dealt to the Miami Marlins?
It was mixed emotions for sure. I think the very first reaction was shock and just not really grasping the fact of how cool it would be or is going to be to be able to represent the hometown, you know, and the team that obviously that dad got to represent for a good portion of his career.
Right.
But obviously the first thing that comes to mind when you get that news is just, you know, all the relationships that I've made in professional baseball are essentially, you know, gone at this point. Right. Obviously I'm maintaining as much as I can with teammates and friends I made with that organization. I loved every coach I met, all the hitting coaches. But that was the first thing that crossed my mind, was just kind of, you know, you got to start from scratch as far as building relationships with hitting coaches and teammates, and that part of it's tough. But once that kind of passed, and, you know, and I got to, you know, say my goodbyes and kind of grasp the fact that I was going to be joining a new team. And I think once I got to Instructional League, that's when it really set in, and I could really get excited and get behind it. Cause I have a lot of memories at spring training, just going up there with my dad at Roger Dean when I was a kid, and getting to see, you know, major league players work and the backfields and kind of stuff that, you know, kids don't really get to see most of the time. So it really started to set in when I got to my locker in instructional league and, you know, see the name play and you get the name on the uni. And that was all really cool and kind of surreal just to kind of experience all that and know that, you know, you're doing this career now with the team that you grew up watching.
I think that's interesting you mention that, because from a fan's perspective, we'd all say, shoot, trade me. I'll go put on a new uniform. This is going to be awesome. But there's a human side to it. And a kid like yourself, you didn't reach the big leagues with the Blue Jays. You haven't played professionally that long, but you build relationships, you build friendships, and you get a call that those are going out the window and you need to start fresh. So what's the transition been like? I know you've been able to join the Marlins Instructional League, but what's been your initial reaction to your new organization and some of the changes you've already seen?
Yeah, first thing, you know, when I got there, I just wanted to learn as much as I could, you know, learn how the organization works. I know every organization is unique in their own way. And I'm starting to, you know, I already see a lot of differences, not good or bad, just differences in that sense. So just learn, you know, learn everything inside out, learn, you know, what they want, you know, what the Miami Marlins are all about, you know, try to embody that, because I want to be, you know, the best player for them that I can be. And obviously that's, you know, it's different. It varies org to org, how they're going to approach things systematically. And the biggest thing I think from takeaways from Instructional League was the analytics side is very, very specific and very, very advanced in the Marlins organization, which is really cool, because that's something I've always been kind of cerebral about, hitting and approach and, you know, everything defensively. And they do a really good job with video, and they got it set up with a video app that, you know, it sends directly our BP every day and our game at bats right to our phone. So I've just, you know, obviously watch all that as much as I can, you know, love video stuff. And the scouting reports, we got to see, they showed us kind of a preview of how they do scouting reports at the major league level. And that was really cool to see too, just how in depth they can be. And that's probably the biggest positive I took away you know, the change was just seeing that, you know, they're going to be that kind of team that really goes the extra mile in that department, which is going to be huge, I think, for our hitters and, you know, for me personally moving forward.
How prepared does that make you feel? And I know this year has been unique, and I'll ask you about all that in just a little bit. But when you get to this organization and they make you feel like a big leaguer, like this is not what we do at the minor league level, but we are presenting you with the information that we are giving guys at the big league level. How does that make you feel? How prepared does that make you feel?
Oh, it gives you all the confidence in the world. You know, if you, the more you know as a hitter, the better success you're going to have. That's just a fact. And they've really emphasized that fact, and they know that, which is really cool to see. And I mean, the more you know about, you know, how a pitcher is going to come at you and how it fits into your approach as well, which is a really cool aspect of what they do, is usually, you know, you'll get a ton of info on the pitchers. You know, Blue Jays were good at that as well. But the uniqueness that the Marlins brought to it was kind of tailoring the scouting reports to each individual hitter and seeing how your hot zones kind of link up to where the pitcher might tend to throw his pitches more or his out pitches. And that was kind of the coolest thing in my opinion. And that just kind of gives you this next level of confidence where you feel like, you know, you have a really good shot of, you know, no matter who is on the mound, because the pitchers these days are really impressive, you know, the stuff they bring to the table. So you really do need any edge you can get. So that's probably, you know, a huge advantage for us.
Griffin Conine joining us on this episode of Beyond the Bases. Griffin, your last name carries a lot of weight in this community. A lot of people remember 03. They think of your dad. He's Mr. Marlin. I'm sure he's dad to you. But he's brought a lot of smiles to a lot of faces down here. Can you tell me what that initial conversation was like with your dad when you called him to tell him the news? Was he aware?
Yeah, he was. I didn't have to call him. You know, I'm living at home. I just had to walk out of the kitchen. Yeah. I don't think he wasn't home at the time when I found out. It was just me and my mom. But first time I saw him after, he had a big smile on his face. You know, he was really excited. And it was kind of a disconnect because I was still at that point in limbo where I was just kind of shocked and like confused about it all and trying to wrap my head around it. But he was already, you know, he was all in. He was completely excited. Obviously, you know, I'm excited to be on that train with him now and just be really pumped to take on, you know, this journey with the hometown team.
I have this vision in my head that when he hung up with you or when he said goodbye or when he left that day or when he came home, I just feel like he would say, you'll never be Mr. Marlin. Does he still remind you who the boss in the family is?
Not a whole lot. You know, I think it's inborn. I think he knows that I know, you know, just from hearing, you know, everyone talk about him and the way they talk about him, you know, former teammates, players, coaches, and the respect they have for him is pretty cool to hear about. So definitely inborn. You know, I know there's big shoes to fill, and I'm going to do my best to do that.
I joke about that, but, you know, it's not easy for a young man like yourself to have a dad who was successful in the big leagues. But how instrumental has he been to your success? Because it isn't always easy for dads and sons to get along and see eye to eye. You butt heads, you have different coaches over the years. But how instrumental has your father been to your success?
Very. You know, I think when you mentioned butt heads, that's the last thing I think of with our relationship, just because he's, you know, really, really laid back and never been, you know, a super hands-on kind of my way, the highway guy. And I think that just comes from, you know, his experience in the game, and super lucky to obviously have that as a guide. And I think the biggest takeaway, I guess I would say, is just his approach to the game, and just, you know, how simple you kind of have to keep everything, and the importance of routines, and kind of just professionalism, I think is the best way to put it. And not necessarily specific, you know, hitting mechanics. We don't have any special bonds drills that we do at home. Nothing crazy, but just, you know, that professionalism that he always brought to the field, that's something that I want to, you know, embody and be that guy as well. Command as much respect as you can.
I would imagine it probably, there's a comfort in knowing, like, he's my dad. I love him. He has taught me so much, but he's letting me pave my own way too. Like, he's letting you be you, make your own mistakes on the field, learn how to hit, right? Like, learn how to do things your way and take instruction from different people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's been the best part, because you hate to see, you know, in travel ball with these coaches that are these dads that kind of, you know, drive their kids crazy and make them, you know, maybe not even like the game, maybe not want to play. And I could see how it'd be really easy to be that guy as a former player in a way, just because, you know, so much, you know, you almost know too much about how everything works. Which is makes it, you know, more impressive, just kind of his approach to everything and you know, how he views the hands-off approach and kind of just letting me, you know, figure it out.
You were born in July of 97. I don't expect you to give me your earliest Marlins memories when you were 3 months old, Griffin. You were 6 in 2003, but what are some of your early memories that you can share with me? I mean, what initially comes to mind when you think Florida Marlins back in the day?
Yeah, I think of Joe Robbie or Pro Player Stadium, whatever it's being called now. Yeah. That's where I spent most of my time as a kid, shagging in the outfield, you know, playing behind guys like Mike Stanton when he was still called Mike. Young guy, you know, Hanley Ramirez, Dan Uglow, those were all kind of the faces that I looked up to as a kid. And it was just, you know, absolute thrill to be able to be around those guys that you view as heroes when you're that age.
And that's when you were a little older here too, right? So that's what, when you were 10, 12?
Yeah, that was towards right, you know, the back end of his career, you know, 07, 08, when he eventually, you know, went back to work with the Marlins after he finished up. And that was kind of when I really, you know, because as a younger kid, I don't know if I really embrace the game so much. You know, I know a lot of kids that even from, you know, age 5, they were just in love with baseball. And I wasn't necessarily that guy. I think it took a little bit longer for me to really get into it. But definitely, you know, that those memories are super fond and super clear still in my mind. It's just kind of the first time I got to be on a pro field.
Do you remember 03 at all? Were you laying in bed? Were you watching your dad on TV? Do you remember the final out or any of that?
I remember game 6. I remember, we had a big watch party here, obviously at this house. So, remember just kind of being groggy, you know, a kid trying to sleep and, just like raining cheers throughout the house and couldn't sleep. And, finally got up and, you know, joined in the celebration as much as I could as a 6-year-old. But, I still do remember that pretty clearly, which is crazy to think about it being that long ago. But, that was very cool.
Hey, so let's go back a little bit, Griffin. And you mentioned baseball. You've probably always been passionate about it. You've always been around it, but it took you a little while to really, you know, just start absorbing everything and put 2 feet in the mud and get after it. Fast forward a little bit to high school. what type of ball player were you, and was playing professionally always like a dream, or what? How, take me through that.
Yeah, I don't think it really was. I don't think I necessarily thought I had what it took at a young age. You know, I was kind of a late bloomer as far as like, you know, body maturity and just physical tools as a baseball player. So it was definitely harder to see a path at that age, you know, in eighth, ninth grade when guys were starting to get big and really like become, you know, studs. Some guys that they're just kind of, you know, those guys that get big really early and just start hitting balls 350 feet when they're in ninth grade. And I was not that, you know, I was the opposite. I was the 140 pounder that was skinny and, you know, didn't really, I think, know my future in the game. You know, I like playing. That was kind of how I viewed it. And then junior year was kind of the big year. That was the big difference maker for me. That summer, just put on a lot of weight without even really thinking about it. I think this was just kind of just me catching up to everyone. And then, you know, I had a really big junior year, started hitting homers. I think when I started hitting homers, I think that's what really, that's when I was like, you know, I love this.
You were hooked. Kinda, yeah. You like thing. A trot around the bases.
I do like the jog. I liked the jog a lot. So I think that was my junior year. I had 8 homers, which was, you know, pretty good.
Right.
And started to realize, you know, I could play in college and started to think about that more than professionally. I think I knew I was kind of I bloomed too late to really eye a professional career out of high school, you know, where some guys, you know, they're ready to go, which is really impressive to me. But yeah, I definitely junior year, I set my sights college ball, you know, play wherever I could. And then even, you know, started to get better and better. And the offers got, you know, started to get better.
All right. So why Duke out of high school? And when you say offers, what else was on the table for you? Duke came in the mail, you get a phone call, everybody leave me alone. That's where I'm going. What was the deal?
Yeah, it was a very interesting process. You know, I think the first kind of, first taste I had of it was like Ivy Leagues. You had a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. You know, they saw me at, I think, some Perfect Game showcases. This was kind of going into my junior year. And they were kind of the first to reach out. You know, Columbia was one of the top ones, which I really liked because I love New York. And, you know, obviously really wanted a good school. My parents were pretty clear about that, you know, being the plan. And I was on board with it. You know, you never know how it's going to end up. And in the game of baseball, it's tough. So definitely wanted to get, you know, a good education. That was first on the list. So yeah, Columbia, we actually got pretty far into the talks. You know, I was planning a visit up there. Then, you know, kind of the next tier started to roll in, and I kind of just, you know, forgot about Columbia essentially. But Rice was the first official offer, visited there. That was, you know, that was really cool. Just a really illustrious program. And that was kind of, when I got that offer, that was kind of just like, you know, this is it. Like, you know, I've kind of, not that I've made it, but like, I was pretty excited, you know, that to just know that you're going to be playing college baseball for sure somewhere. And I wanted to just end it right there. I wanted to commit and sign the letter of intent and just be done with it. You know, it was a really long and stressful process, as I'm sure you can imagine. But my parents, you know, made me go see Duke. They said, we got to go to North Carolina because Wake wanted to have me visit too. So it came down to those three. And then I think Duke was the last visit. And I think once I walked around campus and met Coach Pollard and got to hear, you know, how they viewed everything. And that was kind of an easy decision. It's really awesome there. If you ever have, you know, gotten a chance to see it, the campus is beautiful. And
it's amazing.
I knew the program was kind of headed in the right direction with Coach Pollard. But also it was unique because we were still just scratching the surface of being an elite ACC team. So I knew, me being a kind of a later bloomer, I'd be able to play, you know, hopefully early on. And that was a big part too. You know, I didn't want to be one of those guys that you're waiting until your junior year to be a starter. So it was kind of the perfect storm.
What'd you major in?
I was a visual arts major.
Really? So, what path?
Yeah.
What do you, I mean.
So with that, that's everyone's first question. And usually, I mean, graphic design is where I think eventually I would have taken it. I didn't, left after junior year. So senior year was kind of like when you get into the higher level major courses and specifics. Still haven't, you know, obviously want to go back to school as soon as that opportunity is there.
Get your degree.
And finish up the degree. But awesome. At this point, yeah, that was kind of the plan was I've always been super into art stuff, you know, drawing specifically was kind of my thing. And took a lot of really cool classes there. Took a film animation class, like cartoon, which was really cool. Graphic design stuff was awesome. So that made it kind of fun. You know, I had some roommates that were, you know, killing themselves with these economics classes, and I didn't have to worry about that. But at the same
time, you're drawing cartoons, yeah.
At the same time, you know, those guys are doing very well in their field now. So, you know, everyone won in the end.
Now I'm getting sidetracked, but is this a hobby of yours? Is that something that a little stress reliever amidst the crazy baseball season?
I've gotten away from it a bit. You know, I'll be honest. It was more in high school, middle school. I was huge on it, you know, loved to draw and kind of, you know, drifted away, got back into it in college, which was awesome. But it's always been a hobby. Just something cool to do. And just kind of, you know, like you said, let your mind kind of wander and just stress relief is good.
All right, we're chatting with Griffin Conine on this episode of Beyond the Bases. We've got a few more minutes. All right, so Griffin, we've gotten up to the point here where you go to Duke, and I have pulled up your baseball reference, and it fascinates me, and I need an answer as to what happened, because in 2016, you play 35 games in your freshman year. You hit .205. That summer, you go to the Northwest Woods League. You hit .286. You hit 16 home runs. You didn't hit a single one your freshman year. And then you took off, man, like the home runs started to pile up. You said they started to come in bunches for you later on in high school. Like somewhere here, something clicked. What happened? What conversation took place for you personally where you have just elevated your game, become a slugger, that type of stuff?
So I did mention, you know, homers were kind of the reason that I kind of fell in love with the game and in a way. Got away from that freshman year at Duke. I think I was overmatched. You know, I was intimidated. We faced some really good arms. Zach Gallen, I remember.
Yeah.
That was a hat trick for me as a young freshman, you know, trying to go up there and put it together against that guy. So I think a lot of it was mental. You know, I just felt like I was overmatched, felt unprepared, and took that summer and just ran with it. You know, I was really relieved to just kind of get away from Duke and just kind of just because, you know, the coaches and everything, they can be really, especially in a college atmosphere. I mean, if you have a bad game, you know, you're probably not going to play the next day. That's just how it works.
You got
40 guys and it's tough. So, you know, eventually, you know, I worked myself into more of a backup role. And at that point, I was kind of just setting my sights on, you know, recalibrating in the summer. And I took it just as a time where I wanted to find out what kind of hitter I wanted to be, because that was kind of that point in my career where I was like, where do I want to go with this? You know, do I want to be the home run guy? Do I want to be the contact guy? And I think it just worked out that way that I started, you know, getting hot in the Northwoods, and homers kind of started to become easier and easier. And it felt like I was putting less effort to do that. And it was just kind of naturally happening. And that was kind of like the moment where I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to be. You know, I want to be a power guy. You know, I want to hit the crap out of the ball, you know, every time I go up there, do damage. And that's the kind of player I'm going to be. And I think that was kind of a really point of clarity in that summer when I realized that. And then, you know, going into sophomore year, all the confidence in the world. And, you know, obviously it's a lot easier to play when you feel like you have that kind of confidence.
So this really was more of you laying in bed at nighttime and like having a long, hard talk with yourself about the player that you want to become. But it wasn't, you know, somebody that you met with that worked with you over 6 weeks on retooling your swing or anything. This was you, and you just made a decision that this is the guy I want to be.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, there wasn't any, it wasn't any specific, you know, mechanical thing necessarily. It was kind of just me getting out of my own way, you know, and kind of trying to get out of my head and just letting the natural, you know, path take its course and just kind of sitting back and having fun. You know, that was something I got away from freshman year. I think I was so nervous and so just tight about playing well and, you know, my future and what that all meant. And then summer ball is awesome because, like, it's just so laid back. And that's a huge tool, you know, and college guys, I always urge to just take advantage of summer ball because that's – college coaches, man, are ruthless and in a good way. You know, they stay on you and it's tough. But summer ball is kind of where you get to step back and just really focus on, you know, make it individual to yourself. So that was huge for me.
Well, you know, most people may not remember, Griffin, you were actually drafted by the Marlins in the 31st round back in 2015 out of Pinecrest High School. Of course, you go to Duke, you do a fantastic job, second round in 2018. Fast forward to this year, and I think they're maybe not worried is the right word, but there are 30 organizations out there that are like, my goodness, our top prospects, they could not play this year. Maybe some of them were at the extended camps where they're getting at bats, but this season has not been easy from a developmental standpoint. You were limited to just the 80 games in 2019. Where do you feel you're at right now in your developmental process, and how hard has it been to get better without playing games night in and night out?
It's been tough for sure. I think there's some hurdles to overcome. For me personally, you know, I've always been kind of a solo guy. You know, I like doing just like being on my own, like my off season workouts, you know, I kind of just do on my own, no trainer or anything. Like hitting on my own, you know, my dad and I, we set up a cage out in the back, got a machine. So, it's pretty great. You know, I've really gotten to like lock in on just stuff that I knew that I needed to work on specifically, which is pretty cool. And just, getting to like really tinker and kind of experiment with stuff as far as swings go. Cause I knew coming out of last year, I was going to have to make some changes. Just contact rate was a lot lower. You know, I had a decent year, all things considered, but, yeah, that was the biggest takeaway for me was going forward as the pitchers get better and better, as you know, rise in the system, I'm going to have to, you know, cut the swing down, simplify some things and, just, you know, put as many balls in play as I can. So that's been kind of the goal of this off season, or I guess this quarantine, this non season, right. Was just, you know, shorten up the swing and kind of retooling stuff and just really trying to wrap my head around, you know, how hitting works and really just attack it from, you know, a standpoint where I'm kind of considering all facets of it. You know, my setup, is this the best setup where I can be successful the most often? Is this going to be the most consistent for me and stuff like that? So it's been great for me, honestly. I'm big on taking notes and about hitting, and I got pages and pages on my phone of just stuff I've jot down. So I always go back and read, and it's interesting to see kind of, you know, what I was feeling 6 months ago and how it's changed.
Are you a total nut of the game? I know some guys love baseball. They love doing their job, but they're not turning on MLB Network at night during this whole quarantine. Are you taking notes of a particular player you love watching? What are you doing these past 6 months?
Yeah, it's funny. I never used to be before this quarantine. I never I would watch baseball, you know, but I never really thought about it the way I do now, which is now I can't, you know, every hitter, I want to know why do they hit like that? Why does their swing work like that? You know, I watch tons of video on older guy like Barry Bonds. You know, I love watching video on him and hearing him talk about his approach, and Manny Ramirez and Trout. You know, just I fell in love with just watching all these guys hit and seeing like, okay, this is why he does that. This is why his setup looks like this. And kind of the why, I guess, is the biggest part. You know, why do these moves work for them? You know, what makes them so special? Like, why are these guys elite? And just kind of trying to break it down and seeing if I could find similarities across the board that I could be like, okay, all these hitters have this in common, and how can I apply that into my swing and make myself kind of that elite. So I have become a nut in a way, and people, you know, my buddies joke with me about it. It's become a bit obsessive, but in a good way, I think.
When people watch you, do you try to model your game after anybody? Would anybody say, wow, that looks a lot like X, Y, and Z?
I haven't heard any like, you know, majorly specific ones, you know, pretty broad as far as like most comps I've gotten are more result based, you know, like a power guy that's a right fielder with a good arm. I hear Conforto a lot, which I like, cause he's a really, you know, awesome swing. I watch him a lot. But yeah, as far as specific comps, you know, I watch a lot of different hitters, you know, and there's nothing, I try to take, you know, little things from all kinds of different guys, you know, never really want to model it after anyone per se, but just kind of take small little bits and piece it together into my own kind of, you know, my own approach.
Griffin, as we wrap up, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot more conversations as your career progresses, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I know you guys are probably on a baseball field about 12 hours a day, but when Griffin Conine is not on the baseball field, are you playing PS4, Xbox? You reading books? What are you doing in your downtime?
I'm not a video game guy. I'll say that. I never was really, I don't know. That just never clicked for me. Maybe as a kid, but in college, never was like a Call of Duty guy, never was a Fortnite guy, probably because I was no good at it. It's really not fun if you're not good. But I will say Guitar Hero and Rock Band are huge on those. You know,
you still play them.
Yeah, I do. I actually ordered a guitar when I found out I was going to be home for a while. Got a Rock Band guitar sent here, got it set up with the Xbox. So I'll get after it on the sticks every once in a while on the guitar.
Okay. So hold on now, if there's people around that don't really know you and you're just hanging out and you fire up Guitar Hero, what's the go-to song where like, you're going to just rock the place and they're going to be like, how the heck did you just do that? And we did not expect you to do that.
I know the name of it. It's I'm blanking on it right now.
You get back to us on the name. But yeah, you got one. Yeah. You have a go-to one.
It's I don't know why. Josie's on a Vacation Far Away. What song is that?
Oh,
It's a legendary song. I can't, for some reason, I'm blanking.
Oh, my. I know what you're talking about.
Right? That's it was Joey Bart's walk-up song at Georgia Tech. Yes. That's why I remember it so well. But
yeah, that's, I hear, that's, yes, that's it.
That's the number one. That's the number. I know it like inside and out, you know, can get 100, 100 on expert. So that's my number one.
Netflix guy, what are we watching?
Yeah, Netflix, I'm big on sitcoms. Seinfeld is number one by far. Greatest show of all time, not close. Always ripping through that one, reruns. You know, I've seen it through at least 5 or 6 times now. But yeah, any kind of comedy shows, The Office, Friends, always big on those.
Your Love by The Outfield. There you go.
Yep, there it
that
is.
That was it.
That's the number one.
Griffin, thank you so much, man. It's good to meet you over Zoom, but we can't wait to get up there and see you during spring training and get everything rocking again and get you in a Marlins uniform and have some folks see you and hang out with you. And this is going to be a lot of fun. So thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. No problem. Good to have me.
Thanks again to Griffin for joining us. And look, he's another one of those guys that you've got to keep an eye on here as we move forward. The Marlins continue to bring talent into the organization, and Griffin's a slugger whose impact could certainly be felt soon at the big league level. Before we say goodbye today, our final interview is with Julian Reams, who's a local South Florida artist and a firefighter up in St. Lucie County, who's partnered with the Marlins in their Promote the Vote auction that's focusing on voting social justice and racial equality. Julian has customized some incredible Air Force Ones and Jordans that you can bid on now. Go to marlins.com/promote-the-vote. The auction launched on the 26th. Bidding ends on November 6th, so do not wait. Make sure if you would like to bid on an item, you do so now. Go to marlins.com/promote-the-vote. Now, to find out how the heck he customized 8 pairs of shoes and did such an incredible job, here is Julian Reams.
Well, with a focus on voting, social justice, and racial equality, the Marlins launched the Promote the Vote auction on Monday, October 26th, with proceeds benefiting the Miami Marlins Foundation's Election Day voting initiative with Feed the Polls. Now, in conjunction with the launch of the auction, the Marlins, who are continuing their efforts in the local community to raise awareness for social justice and racial equality, they announced the collaboration with Unknown. It's a Miami-based community platform, apparel label, and retail concepts destination. It's going to create a lifestyle tee. It's also going to benefit the Marlins Foundation's voting initiative with Feed the Polls. Now, the funds from the Promote the Vote auction and Unknown t-shirt sales will go to providing 2,000 meals at select polling locations in Liberty City and Little Havana next Tuesday on Election Day. In addition to the exclusive Unknown shirt, the Promote the Vote auction is also going to offer fans the chance to bid on custom painted, these are awesome, Jordan 1 and Nike Air Force 1 sneakers designed by South Florida local artist and firefighter Julian Reams, who is joining us on this episode of Beyond the Bases. Julian, thank you so much. This is so darn cool. How did this come about for you, man?
There's a friend that I have. He works with the Marlins organization, and he was talking with Mr. Shaw one day, and he mentioned my name. So he showed him like my page and that I do art. I've been doing art my entire life, really. And he saw it, he liked it, and I got in contact with Mr. Shaw. We had a conversation, and it was a green light after that.
That's awesome. You know, I've always been fascinated by folks like yourself who are artists, and they can paint pictures and draw and color, and I mean, it's such a unique skill. So take me back to when you were little. Why art? What drew you to it?
Man, it's funny. I don't know. I think it was hereditary, honestly. I just always used to know I would draw and sketch, and then my mom noticed it, and she said something to my dad. And let's say by third grade, there's a magnet art program down here. It started at Perrine Elementary. I went and I auditioned for that, and then I got in there. So I was in a magnet art program from the third grade until I graduated high school. And then I ended up getting a minor in art in college as well. So art's been with me my whole life, even when it wasn't like the popular thing to do. It wasn't the thing that, you know, I talked about amongst my peers, but I've been in it since a very young age. So
that's amazing. So talk to me a little bit about these custom painted Jordan 1 in Nike Air Force 1 sneakers. Tell us what they look like. How long did they take you? That's what I really want to know.
Okay, so there's 8 pairs. There's 2 Jordan 1s, and the other 6 are Air Force 1s. So if you want to hear the titles of the eight shoes, like the titles and like bullet points, that's kind of what I based everything off of.
Absolutely. So
the first one was called Vote. And basically, without putting any political parties on there, basically it's just saying, you know, exercise your right, go out and vote. And so whichever side you are, red or blue or whatever, it doesn't matter. The shoe is about voting, and both sides are equally represented on each shoe. So there's no bias there. The second pair was called 42. That's to pay homage to Jackie Robinson. And I actually enjoy that because I had to do a little homework each shoe to make sure I had enough topics, you know, subject matter to put on the shoe. And I saw that he was a second lieutenant in the Army, and that he was a part of this 761st Tank Battalion. They had a pretty cool logo, just to read up on that. He played a little professional basketball. So it kind of was a history lesson for me. And I appreciated the process.
Awesome.
Because I got a little more, you know, homework, a little more knowledge about him, and with all the topics of for each shoe. So the third shoe was Juneteenth. The fourth shoe was peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. The fifth one is Our Heroes. Basically, bullets on that is like people like Tommy Smith and John Carlos in the 68 Olympics, and like Muhammad Ali, what he went through. When they considered what he was doing was draft dodging for the Vietnam War. Basically, there was a meeting in Cleveland, and there were 10 athletes there. Amongst those athletes was future Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, amongst other players who there to go and be like, we stand with him and his decision. Don't strip him of his titles. Basically, they went out of their way, away from their sport, to stand up behind him. And some of them were looked at kind of as hypocrites because some of them were former veterans.
Right.
So it's kind of, they had to, you know, it was interesting. Again, reading on it, I got more knowledge on it. That was cool. Also, we put on that shoe, the Our Hero was Colin Kaepernick, because it's the same thing. It's almost like a sacrifice to where he was doing it at first 4 years ago. People are like, oh, look at this guy. They're calling him the name. They're blackballing this and that. And then we see something like what happens to George Floyd. And it's an example of what he was kneeling for. You know what I mean? So things like that. And then the sixth shoe was Black Lives Matter. The seventh was social justice. That was basically just a bunch of the way I did that shoe. I did a bunch of like picket signs saying different things amongst the shoe. And then the eighth one was Negro League Kings. That's actually the first shoe I did. And that, again, that was interesting reading up, finding out about Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson. Sure. Just the names that aren't as household as a Jackie Robinson, but they're around the same time and just had just as much importance. Like Satchel Paige, I didn't realize he was the first Negro leaguer inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Just to read up stuff and hear stuff like that, it's like, man, this is interesting, like the dynamic behind it and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed the project just off of the knowledge that I obtained from doing it.
So here's my, and when I tell you I know nothing, I mean, I know nothing. Do you like go into InDesign and you have the shoe and you eyeball it? But like, how do you do this?
So here's what I try to do. And I can't wait till you see the shoes, Kyle, because you'll appreciate it more, especially talking to me now, is I try to make it look like two different shoes in one, but always to the point to where if you're on the left side, they're uniformed. If you're on the right side, they're uniformed. But let's say let's take the Vote ones, for instance.
Yeah.
One side, let's say the outside left shoe and the inside right shoe are all red. And then the opposite, the outside right shoe and the inside left shoe is all blue.
Hmm.
But depending on which side you're standing on, it's either going to look like I have on an all red shoe or all blue shoe. So I kind of do that with all of them, not necessarily with color wise, but just the pattern that I do. I make sure it's similar. And then I kind of go off of that. So really I get one shoe done and then I mirror it on the other shoe. And I try to do the same thing with the information that I have to put on the shoe. So,
well, folks need to check this out. It's the Promote the Vote auction. Do you have a painting you're most proud of or a piece of work that you are most proud of?
No, it's like they say, like parents with kids.
Yeah.
Everyone has a favorite, but officially they can't say. I will say I've done a project more recently. It was at the fire department. I work for St. Lucie County Fire District.
Okay.
This past February, what they did was they wanted to pay homage to the African American first on the department. So like the first African American male hired, the highest ranking, the first female hired, the longest tenured, like that. So I was able to, in one of the stations, I was able to paint the American flag in the background, and I did the red line like to show support of the fire service.
Wow.
And I was able to paint their portraits that we took this year for the yearbook, just painting them all there in color. So that was cool. That took like maybe 2 months. I took my time with that one, though. It was pretty big, too. It was pretty large.
So I know I know being an artist, and that is a passion of yours. And forgive me for putting the firefighter thing on the back burner. But was that something – were you always passionate about firefighting, or were you young and like, I need a full-time job?
I'll be honest with you. So I can remember – it was always art, you know, art has always been there, like I was telling you earlier. But I remember one day being at lunch, it was for my mom's birthday years ago, and her brother was there, my uncle, and I had just graduated from college, and I knew I wasn't going to use my degree. I got a bachelor's in business administration, mm-hmm. emphasis in marketing, but I was just like, yeah, I'm not really like the cubicle guy kind of guy, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a creative, and I'm always, my mind's always wondering. So he's like, well, you should look into the fire service, because it gives you enough time to do whatever you're passionate about.
Right.
So I just was like, all right, cool. And when I went to did the EMT first and then the fire service, that's when I was like, you know what? This is actually a really cool career. Like, luckily, once I got into the schooling of it, I enjoyed it. And I said, okay, this is something I definitely want to pursue. So
how long you been a firefighter for now?
I've been with this department for 8 years now.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 8 years. I got hired at 25, so I've been holding on.
That's incredible. Well, Julian, as we wrap up, I think it's important. Where can people follow you? Where can they find your work if they want to check it out?
If you want to just, I'm on Instagram. It's at Jubeanski, Jubeanski. So just check it out.
That's awesome. Julian, thank you so much for everything you do to keep our community safe, and what you've done here for the Promote the Vote auction. 8 pairs of shoes ranging from Jordan 1s to Nike Air Force 1s. You did incredible work. So thank you so much for the time, Julian.
No problem. I appreciate it.
Thank you again to Julian. Make sure you check out his work on marlins.com/promote-the-vote. The auction ends on November 6th. There are some awesome game-used memorabilia, jerseys, caps, balls, of course, the shoes that Julian customized, you name it. All for a good cause. Make sure you get involved. marlins.com/promote-the-vote. That's all the time we have on this episode of Beyond the Bases, but stay tuned all off season long. We'll be with you every 2 weeks, and we will keep you up to date on everything that's taking place.